Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. We got a loaded episode today. Justin Termini from SiriusXM comes on first, breaking down a lot going on around the NBA. Then Kelly Eco from Yahoo Sports talking about his report about LaMelo Ball and the Houston Rockets. And then Ricky O'Donnell joins Draft Class to close the show. And we touch on some other NBA topics as well before we get into that. That's all coming up right now. All right, let's talk some NBA, starting with the Los Angeles Clippers, because Kawhi Leonard came back on Sunday, and it didn't help. The Clippers lost once again, falling to 5-12 on the season. Justin Termini from SiriusXM Radio joins me to discuss. Termini, what did you think about the Clippers losing once again?
Let me ask you this, KOC. I'm a little bit older than you, and I guess you had the years there with Lob City, right, where the Clippers weren't too bad. But historically, like, they've been that organization my entire life where people point to, like, oh, well, you're the Clippers of Major League Baseball if you're a bad baseball team, right? Could you make the argument that as bad as their history has been, 50, 55 plus years, this is the worst stretch? I mean, and this is an organization that, like, sees Sean Livingston get the injury. They lived through the Donald Sterling years, including the scandal. They draft Michael Olowokandi. Think about the last 8 months. They see their cross-town rivals get Luka Doncic, okay, to start things off. They no-show a game 7. I'm not sure I've seen many teams no-show a game 7 against Denver. They have the offseason with aspiration and that disaster. Then they get Ty Lue, which is linked to this gambling scandal. Now it's on the periphery of it, but still, he's got his name in it. That's not something you want. Then you get the all these injuries, Kawhi to start the year, Bradley Beal's done for the season. You don't have your own draft pick at the end of the year, and you're off to a 5-12 start. You make an argument this is the worst stretch in the history of the Clippers, and that's saying something.
it's saying everything about how bad it is right now for the Clippers. It's just nuts because, as you said, you never wanted to be the Clippers, right? You never wanted to be the Clippers. And at this point, 5-12 to start the season and everything you listed for them, it feels like there's still a chance it could get even worse at this point. Like, it doesn't feel like this is yet rock bottom. We haven't gotten a decision on the aspiration situation yet. What if they get docked even just one first round pick? They don't have a lot of picks. One first-round pick is pretty impactful. What if they actually do end up in the lottery and the Thunder end up with a top-four pick? It could get worse.
Well, and that's the thing. For like 50, 55 years, however long this organization has been around, they've spent the entire time screwing over their own fan base. Like, all right, but you're screwing over your own fan base. I'm not a Clipper fan. I got no issue with it. Go to work. Now you're screwing over the rest of the NBA. Like, there's 28 other teams that are going, what the hell are you doing? Because, like, they're actually, like, I go to a game. I went to the Celtics Clippers game the other day. I wouldn't, be surprised if you got people in the Celtics offices going, hey, listen, why don't we give them this game? Because you don't want to see Oklahoma City get the number one or number two or number three overall pick. So they're screwing over more than just their own fan base and their own team. They're actually playing with the future of the rest of the NBA. Like, Denver can't win a championship as good as they are. The Knicks, the Cavaliers, if they're going to hand OKC the first or second overall pick in this draft.
It's just absolutely crazy. And not to mention, I mean, little things that could happen along the way. Norman Powell having an all-star caliber season for the Miami Heat. He gets named an all-star. It's like, where do we find guys like that? The John Collins acquisition, like, it made a little sense on paper, but, inserting him in the starting lineup after Derrick Jones Jr. goes down, not working quite as well. Brook Lopez, by the way. Brook Lopez, you trade Kevin Porter Jr. to the Bucks to go get Brook Lopez. Brook Lopez is playing 14 minutes per game, Termini. It's like, he is not the number one reason why the Clippers are in the situation that they are so far this season. But Lopez looks washed, man. He does not look good at all so far this season. He's not even averaging 2 rebounds per game. The Clippers, when he's on the floor, are rebounding only 62.8% of misses. That is the equivalent of worst in the NBA. They're rebounding 70% by comparison with Zubats is on the floor. He's not able to stay in front of guys, not protecting the rim in the same way that he did in years past, even just 2, 3, 4 years ago. He's just moving slower offensively. He can't do anything besides hit standstill three-pointers, pick and pop three-point percentages down, not able to impact on the post against smaller players as much anymore. Teams are switching pick and rolls against him, which means he's not getting lob opportunities because he can't post up against smaller guys. It is bad for the Clippers, this investment in Brook Lopez that they made so far this year. And he's not the number one reason All those other reasons you listed are far more important and for why things suck right now for the Clippers and for why they're in the situation they are right now and the looking at the play-in situation. But for Ty Lue in this situation, you lose Norm Powell for Bradley Beal, who's out injured. You get Brook Lopez, who's supposed to be a good backup center for you. He looks like he's ready to retire. There's just not a lot of options for this team right now that on paper seemed like it was supposed to be deeper, but it's just like, it's like Harden and sometimes Kawhi and nothing. And Zubats finally had an amazing game and nothing else.
Now you just crushed Brook Lopez even more so than the Grizzlies did the Kings the other day. That was harsh, but you're right. I mean, he hasn't been able to do anything, and they go with all these older players. Beal is already hurt. And probably the most concerning part is the thing you just said at the end. James Harden's been great. So what happens, KOC, when James Harden tails off here a little bit, right? Because he's kind of putting some perfume on all this stink, and he's playing really well. But the issue is I think he's top 10 in minutes. His usage is as high as it's been since he was in Houston, and the guy's 36 years of age. So I wouldn't anticipate that Harden can keep up this pace, for 60, 70, 80 games. Maybe he could do it, 5 years ago. I don't think he could do it at the age of 36. So once he starts to tail off here a little bit, or God forbid he misses any time with some injuries, even though he's been relatively healthy in his career, then what happens to this team?
Exactly. I mean, 100%. He has 55 points against the Hornets the other night. He's having this unbelievable season, 27.8 points per game on 17.8 field goal attempts per game. That's both the highest since the 2019-20 season when he was 30. And he's 36 years old at this point. He's fourth in the NBA in touches per game, fourth most efficient pick and roll scorer so far this season, fourth most efficient isolation scorer so far this year. So to your point, he has been unbelievable so far this year for the Clippers. He's the reason why they aren't winless, Harden is. But can you really expect him to sustain this at 36 years old, which is why Kawhi needs to be, superstar level Kawhi Leonard? It can't just all be on Harden throughout this entire season to carry the load in the way he is. I mean, fourth most touches per game, fourth most minutes possessed of the ball so far this season, Termini, at 36 years old. You can't, I mean, it's unbelievable what he's doing, and much respect to Harden for that, but you can't expect him to carry this load over the whole season.
No, I mean, it's not sustainable. And you also wonder, like, does his attitude go south? Now, he seems to be having fun, and maybe it helps that he had such bad stops elsewhere. He was like the number two or the number three option. So maybe that makes him like happy in a spot where they're not winning. But we've seen James Harden sour in the past. So I don't know if it sours to the point where he wants to be dealt. He's also from LA. But if he does sour, again, you get put in another spot, because I'm sure there are teams out there that would want to trade for this version of James Harden because of the level that he's playing at right now. But, it all goes back to Kawhi. If Kawhi does his job, then it's a relatively serviceable team. I mean, I don't know how you felt about them last year heading into the postseason. I actually thought that they were the second best team in the Western Conference. I thought it was OKC. Then I thought it was the Clippers. I thought they got the bad draw in the opening round. Obviously, they lost that close game where Aaron Gordon tips in the Jokic air ball and maybe things go differently. And then they no-show in game seven. But I actually thought they were the second best team in the Western Conference heading into the postseason last year. So I'm caught off guard by this. I didn't see this coming.
Yeah, I thought they would be better than they have been so far this year. 5-12 on the year, currently the eighth worst record in basketball. There's no way you could have, even if you're a Clippers hater, I don't think you could have anticipated them being this bad. But you also couldn't have seen Bradley Beal suffer a major injury, Kawhi Leonard missing all this time. Well, you could see that coming. You could see that coming. But everything else, I mean, Brook Lopez has fallen off a cliff, as I said. Zubats is a great player, but he hasn't replicated what he did last season yet. Yeah. Against Cleveland on Sunday, he was great, but ultimately it's been the Harden show. It's had to be the Harden show. And after he scored 55 points over the weekend, he had his quote where he said, "Basketball is life." I enjoyed your thoughts on that with Harden just playing the way he does and having the perspective that he does.
No, look at that. You guys got my tweet up on the board. I'm on NBA TV. They don't even throw my tweets up on the board. So you guys are sharp here at Yahoo Sports. But so I wrote much more refreshing than that dumb big hashtag bigger than basketball hashtag junk we had to hear about for some years from stars a couple of years back. Fans care. They want to root for players who act like they care as well. And, I guess you agree with that, because I think you ended up liking that tweet, or at least you're throwing it up here on the board. And, we went through, I don't know how you felt about that, but when I got to listen to Dwayne Wade and LeBron specifically, like bigger than basketball. You wonder why people like lose interest in the regular season. You constantly have stars telling us that the sport isn't the most important thing. This kind of a throwback to the Kobe stuff where Kobe's like, no, basketball is my life. It's all that I fixate on. And say what you want about Harden. It doesn't like let him off the hook for, you know, quitting on Houston, quitting on Kevin McHale when he wanted him fired, the junk that he pulled in, you know, Philadelphia and Brooklyn, etc. Doesn't excuse that type of stuff, KOC, but at least you know the guy loves the sport. Like you can't, like you can question it with some people, probably even his teammate Kawhi Leonard. You can't question it with James Harden. Like the guy loves to play basketball. He's never talking about other stuff, you know, outside of the game and off the court. Is, you know, never whining about you know, the season length like Steve Kerr or load man. Just goes out there and plays. So I love that aspect and appreciate that aspect about Harden.
I think history will remember James Harden very fondly. I do. Over the course of time, they're going to see the amount of games played, the amount of big playoff moments, and you're going to see the lows as well with some of the choke jobs from James Harden. But I think people will look back on that era as the Warriors, this dynasty, and be like, oh, Houston was the team that gave him a real run. That's what I think people will look back on with Harden, and never mind everything you're saying.
Not the no-shows in like game sevens, because that's it. Like that's kind of what I'm going to think of. I'm going to think of like
I'm a Harden apologist. I am.
That sounds like it, because like, hey, listen, I respect all this stuff about James Harden, but when somebody brings up the name James Harden, I'm going to say, yeah, you get him into a game seven, the guy completely disappeared. Like I've had literal conversations on my show going, well, he's either hungover or he's concussed. It's one of the two. That's how bad he has been out there. So it's like, if I'm having conversations about whether you're hungover or concussed, you know, that means that you've been pretty bad in some big games.
He has been horrible in some of those big games, but he did push him to the brink. He pushed him to a game seven. Nobody else was doing that with the Warriors during that era in the Western Conference. Nobody else was. Nobody.
No, I will give you that. So, yes, got them to the game seven at the very least, where they had the 3-2 lead and they blew it. And that kind of leads into another guy that made news this weekend. But I'm going to let you know, host the show, and Chris Paul, because, you know, one of the things you remember about Chris Paul is him always getting injured in big spots. So it's like, yes, Harden going out there on the floor and putting up no numbers in big spots. But at least he took the floor. Chris Paul, half the time in a big game, never showed up because he's suffering from a hamstring or a jammed thumb.
Well, let's talk about Chris Paul right now then, because Chris Paul did officially announce, as long suspected, that he was going to retire after the season, his 21st season in the NBA. Chris Paul will call it quits. 12-time All-Star, 11-time All-NBA, 9-time All-Defensive Player, one Rookie of the Year way back in 2005, finished top five in MVP voting 5 times. He 6 times led the NBA in steals, 5 times led the NBA assists, 4 seasons. Averaging at least 18 points, 10 assists, 2 steals. Isaiah Thomas did that 3 times back in the 80s, and no one else has done that more than once. John Wall, Russell Westbrook, Tim Hardaway, Michael Adams, Kevin Johnson. So Chris Paul up there with some big names historically. Like I said, with Isaiah Thomas doing it 3 times. Chris Paul, one of the greatest point guards ever. Termini, one of the greatest ever, for sure.
No, I can't argue with that. I would say, like, I think of his legacy, since we were talking about with that James Harden, top 10 point guard of all time, best Clipper of all time, right? One of the great ceiling raisers of all time. You know, whenever he joined the Clippers, he joined Houston, he joined Phoenix, he joins OKC. They all take a massive step forward. Amazing regular season point guard, well-deserved top 75 guy. I wouldn't argue with any of that stuff. A guy that probably you look at like the individual records, maybe is a little bit overhyped because he's second in steals, second in assists. You look at the analytical stuff, and I'm not sure how much you are into that, but if you look at like win shares, box score plus minus, value over replacement, it would make it sound like he's, you know, the 5th or 6th best player in the history of the sport. I wouldn't go that far, but also a hell of a career.
It was a hell of a career. I mean, you know, unfortunately, the championship ring did elude him, as you said. Always seemed to get hurt, had some mind-boggling turnovers and clutch moments as well throughout his playoff career. And I mean, I saw you did put him outside of your top 5 greatest point guards, yeah, ever, which I think is fair. I was a little bit surprised. You know, people, you know, you had Magic, Curry, Oscar, Isaiah, Cousy. People got on you for Bob Cousy. in the top five.
Oh, I love him getting on me for Bob Cousy, but Cousy's the reason that everybody's like, so he's the innovator. Like, how did Chris Paul change the game, right? And I have an issue if you're arguing Chris Paul on this list. I would like people to go back and do their research. I mean, Cousy wins an MVP. Cousy was the best player in the sport. We always say that like Magic and Bird saved the sport, and they did. Cousy was sort of the first guy that saved the sport because he was the first showman, right? When the sport wasn't doing well, the first guy to go behind the back through his legs, etc. So he wanted a high level. And the way I always view it, KOC, is you compare him to their peers, right? So how good was this guy compared to the guys that he was playing against? And Bob Cousy made 10 first-team All-NBAs. I think the only people that have made 10 first-team All-NBA or more than 10 first-team All-NBAs are LeBron, Kobe, and Karl Malone. So he was one of the two best guards for 10 years during his career. Chris Paul did that four times. So him compared to the next best point guard at the time, if we're not counting Oscar as the same era, because Oscar kind of came in a little bit after him, I think you have to have Cousy in your top five. And, you know, I wouldn't even put Chris Paul at six. I think you could argue it. I also like John Stockton and Jason Kidd ahead of him. So the highest I personally would put him is eighth, but I could see people arguing, you know, borderline top five.
Yeah, I mean, look, if people want to, you know, say since 1980 for these rankings, so be it. But if you're including every decade of basketball, Cousy undoubtedly belongs in the top five. Chris Paul, undoubtedly going to be a Hall of Famer. One guy who has seemed for a moment to be on that track, but definitely is no longer on that track. Ja Morant, it's a busy weekend for him. Despite not playing at all for the Memphis Grizzlies, they did beat the Dallas Mavericks over the weekend, and they got into it. After the game, Termini, after Klay Thompson, so just a little bit of history here. After Klay Thompson won his fourth ring at the podium, he called Jaren Jackson Jr. a bum, and that's because JJJ at the time tweeted, strength in numbers, right? And so after this game between the Mavericks and the Grizzlies, 3 years later since that happened, Klay missed a shot, end of the game, and Grizzlies win the game. Ja Morant goes up to Klay after the game, and he says, you a bum now. He says, you a bum now. And Klay Thompson, after that game, just eviscerated Ja Morant. He said, he's a funny guy with no accountability, just running his mouth. He's been running his mouth a long time. It's funny you run your mouth when you're on the bench. It's kind of been the whole story of his career so far, just leaving us wanting more. We all want to see him out there and do his best. But he's just been letting a lot of other stuff get in the way of that. We need that in the NBA. We need our best players to be out there. When you're a star, it comes with a great responsibility. I hate to see that go to waste. Termini, just I was blown away by Klay ripping him to shreds. Ja Morant, I'm not going to be, you know, a hall monitor of trash talk here, but at the same time, when you're in street clothes and you don't play in the game, it to me, it's just another sign of poor leadership, poor decision making from Ja Morant. Just stay out of it in this situation here. And for him, man, it is sad. We are far removed from the highs of Ja Morant in that series against the Golden State Warriors 3 years ago. We are so far removed from that. He's having the worst season of his career by far.
Yeah.
And he's saying to Klay Thompson, you a bum now. Ja Morant, before the season, I don't know if you ever saw, I did a top 50 rankings, right?
Okay.
And I had Ja Morant ranked like 45. And Grizzlies fans, Ja stands got on my ass for that. And I'm like, what are you guys talking about? He hasn't done top 15. This might be generous. And it was generous. Is he even one of the 100 best players in the NBA right now?
Maybe 100. But I don't think. Yeah, I don't think you're wrong in that. And like, listen, all the different websites that do those ranking things, I think had him relatively in the same spot, which is nuts because coming off the 2000, like you go back and you look at where he was in 2022, coming off that season when he made All-NBA, you know, he was probably like 9th or 10th on a lot of these lists. Like he was within the top 10. They're saving it like for the final day. All right, here's our top 10. Ja Morant's on that list. But you're right. What has this guy improved on? He hasn't improved his behavior. He hasn't improved his health. He hasn't improved his defense. He hasn't improved his jump shot. So he hasn't improved across the board one single aspect of his game. So that's a problem. They're not winning at a high level anymore. And I'll just tell you a little story here with what the NBA had me do a couple of years ago. Okay. So we were on the NBA app and they wanted to sell like jersey night. Okay. You know how they have jersey day in the NBA. They said, Terminate, we're going to send you a jersey. You wear it on the app to promote the day. And they said, do you have a preference what jersey you want? And I said, I don't have a preference. Send me any jersey. They sent me Ja Morant's jersey, KOC. Why do you send somebody Ja Morant's jersey when you're trying to promote something? Well, because you want to make him the face of the league, or you want to make sure that people, you know, are gravitating towards him. You think the NBA is going to send me a Ja Morant jersey in 2026? They're not sending me that jersey because they got a million other people that they could promote that handle, not only play better on the floor, but also handle themselves how an NBA player should handle themselves. He does not. And I thought Clay said it perfectly. And the key was the last line. I hate to see it go to waste. There's nothing worse than wasted talent. And Ja Morant right now is wasting his career.
Absolutely wasting it away. And it's such a bummer because this guy at his peak was unbelievable to watch. Downhill attacker. He was so explosive and exciting. He was electric. He hit clutch shots. He made big plays. He lifted this small market franchise and made them just put a spotlight on them nationally, internationally. And now we're in a position where it's like, okay, last year they get rid of the whole coaching staff in part because he didn't like playing in the system with all this motion and movement like you're seeing now in Miami, which is working to a great effect. And then this year they bring in their pick and roll heavy Isola head coach. Not happy there either, not staying healthy, not hitting jumpers, not getting better at anything, to your point. And so with Morant, you're the bum now. That's the sad part about all of this. It's currently he looks like the bum now. It's crazy.
Now, and I understand him being upset with the new style of like substitutions. I think any star would, but the way that he handled it was inappropriate. And he's also lost the benefit of the doubt. And I'll ask you, not to put you on the spot, because you're probably going to go back a couple of years. When's the last time you could remember Ja Morant making news for something he did on the court instead of something he did via an injury or via his behavior? Yeah. I can't think of the last time that I said Ja Morant did this on the court. We got to talk about it on the show, but I could rattle off a million different occasions where I said, all right, we got to talk about Ja Morant today for a negative reason.
I mean, look, Grizzlies fans and Ja stans are going to be like, well, you know, he hit some clutch buckets in like game three, whatever it was, game five earlier this season. I think it was against Phoenix. It's like one game.
Congratulations. One game. I think he's one got game. Like seven playoff wins to his name. All right. So that's not that's like you said, that's not a top 50 player. If you're the number one option on a team, you have seven playoff wins to your name.
Not that like what people say on social media matters, but it shocked me seeing the amount of people who are like, Ja Morant is a way better player than Klay Thompson. It's like, are you like 8 years old?
Well, I mean, social media is like, I get scared to drive because I'm thinking like the people that I'm interacting with on social media have cars and they're driving and they're very, you know, that means there's a lot of stupid people out there.
Well, there's
a lot of dummies. It's helped my self-confidence because I'm going, I thought I was stupid. Now I read the responses.
Same here.
It's like, I'm one of the brightest people that's ever lived. I sent out a tweet over the weekend and you would think it's like one of those 99-1 topics, right? Like I hear in politics all the time, I turn on the news, I'm like, well, this is a 90-10, you know, topic where 90% of the population believes this and 10% believes this. You would think that that's a 99-1 topic where people are going to be on 99 are going to be on Clay's side and there'll be 1% that's defending Ja Morant. Instead, I send out a tweet, I get a million people going, Clay Thompson would be nothing without Steph Curry. Clay's a bomb. He can't even dribble, etc. And people are defending Ja Morant. I'm afraid to go outside.
I really can't believe it. Like the amount of people who are like Clay's individual accomplishments don't compare to Ja. It's like Ja made one All NBA.
And I mean, you got this tweet up here from Habistraw where he says, since Klay Thompson tore his Achilles after tearing his ACL, he's played in more NBA games than Ja Morant. How the heck is that even possible? So, you know, forget all the other things, all the accolades. He's a better shooter. He's a better winner. He's a better defender at his apex, et cetera. He handles himself better. The guy's healthier than a guy that tore his ACL and tore his Achilles all within a year. And that guy that did that is still healthier than Ja Morant over the last couple of years.
Enough killing Ja Morant. We got a lot more time for that this season. Norm Powell, you know, the Clippers lose him. He goes to the Miami Heat. Tyler Hero is set to return on Monday night, first of all. Just want to mention that. Hero's going to return later tonight. I'm looking forward to this in part, Termini, because so last week I made the argument that Bam Adebayo belongs in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation. Heat have a top five defensive rating.
Yeah.
The Heat offense this year, like their team is built for defense, but their offense ranks 14th in offensive rating so far this year, in part because of the system they're playing with no screens, just off-ball motion and movement. It's an extreme version of what Memphis did last season. And so with Norm Powell, he's having this all-star caliber season where he is just it just incredible within this role, especially as an isolation scorer. So far this season, of the players that have logged 50 isolations, Norm Powell ranks second in isolation scoring efficiency. SGA, of course, ranks number one. Norm Powell scoring 1.25 points per isolation. That's second in the NBA, ahead of Donovan Mitchell, ahead of James Harden, ahead of Devin Booker, ahead of Luka, ahead of a bunch of guys. It's a little different with Miami, though. Powell doesn't get normal isolations necessarily because of the way Miami's offense operates without screens. It's not like pick and roll, switch occurs, and then Powell is on an island. It's all just within flow of the team. It's all within the flow because the way the Miami Heat offense works is they're not trying to create advantages with a screen. They're trying to find space through motion. And that's where Norm Powell is getting all of these advantages. And it's just, honestly, the coolest thing to see this guy in his early 30s have a career-best season in the first year on a new team in this innovative system that I think teams are going to end up copying. When you see guys like Norm Powell playing at the level that he is, it's really fascinating from a basketball standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, in the first two guys you had up there for that ISO stat, SGA, Norm Powell, nice job by the Clippers letting both of those guys go away. So you said it could get worse. That's an example maybe of how their season is getting worse. But, you know, and I thought this started last year with Norm Powell, KOC, because I felt like, and a lot of people around the NBA were ticked off. Like, usually it's like maybe the media will be upset with LeBron. Maybe the players will be upset with LeBron. Maybe the fans will be upset with LeBron. I thought last year at the All-Star game, all three entities were upset at him at the same time. Remember when he pulled out last second? Because I thought Norm Powell probably would have gotten that call as that final All-Star for the Western Conference last year. So I feel like it started last year. With that said, you didn't see him taking another step forward once he got down to Miami. And of all the things, like some things I at the beginning of the season said, and I got right, okay? I'm looking good on him. The one thing that I got wrong is my assessment of the Heat the entire time was, even without Tyler Hero hurt, okay, was how are they going to score? They're a horrific offensive team under Eric Spoelstra in the years they haven't had LeBron. I don't think they've ever, you know, finished in the top 10 with Eric Spoelstra coach team offensively without LeBron in the lineup. So I said, how is this team going to score? I just don't see how it happens. And all of a sudden, they got one of the better offenses in the sport. They're the fastest paced team in the sport, which historically is the opposite of what Spoelstra is doing. So I give credit to two entities down there. I give it to, you know, Norm Powell for what he's doing within the offense. And then I give it credit to Spoelstra for changing his, you know, entire philosophy.
Absolutely. I mean, it's pretty amazing. Like, you have a Hall of Fame coach in Spo who changes his philosophy after so much success over a decade plus at this point. And I misspoke earlier. I said the Heat are 14th in offensive rating. They moved up to 13th. And this is 13th with a team, as you said, this is an offense that I didn't expect to excel in the way that they have. And then they were missing their best overall offensive talent in Tyler Hero, who returns on Monday. On one hand, you could say, oh, well, maybe Hero's return is going to step on Powell. I don't think so with the way this offense operates. So I'm very bullish on what the Heat are going to look like with Hero returning. Hopefully he stays healthy the remainder of the year. Because overall, to me, they're the biggest surprise in the Eastern Conference. No doubt about it. I was wrong about the Heat. The biggest surprise in the Western Conference, that's the Phoenix Suns. The Suns had an absolutely amazing comeback. So the Suns trail by 8 with a minute left in the game, and then they take a three-pointer. They miss the three-pointer. They get a putback opportunity, cut it to 113-107. Wolves inbound the ball. The Suns steal it. They hit a three off of this play, cut it to 113-110, score 5 points in a matter of seconds to trail by 3. At this point, then Julius Randle on a drive to the rim gets the ball stolen from him, gets stripped, Suns score going back the other way. And at this point, things are crazy again. They get another steal off another inbound. Then they have an offensive foul, unfortunately. Wolves get the ball back. 18.7 seconds left. Anthony Edwards gets the ball inbounded to him, gets fouled as you would expect. At that point, Anthony Edwards, 86% from the free throw line, 41 points in the game, and he misses both free throws. He misses both. Suns get the ball back, inbound it to Colin Gillespie, who hits the game-winning jumper, a fadeaway to win it for the Phoenix Suns. Wolves were not able to score on the other end. Phoenix goes crazy, winning an NBA Cup game on Friday night. Colin Gillespie and the Phoenix Suns. Termini, what a year they're having. What a surprise so far this season.
Yeah, they're fun. I also don't want to deal with it because my co-host on Sirius XM NBA Radio NBA TV is Eddie Johnson. So he's calling these games, which can get a little difficult because he's got to rub it in on our show. The difference in, I guess, vibes or atmosphere around that organization has been amazing because clearly I didn't have the talent heading into this year compared to the last couple. Jordan Ott's done a fantastic job. People don't know who he is starting the season when they made the hire. They've been fantastic. I mean, give credit to, you know, even a guy like Dylan Brooks, who I think just from a personality, we were talking about Chris Paul being a floor raiser or a ceiling raiser. I think you could say the same thing about Dylan Brooks. I think he's had a tremendous impact in what they're doing. And then you get a lot of surprises, like a guy like Gillespie.
Yeah, Gillespie has been so good for them. And you mentioned Eddie Johnson, your co-host, of course. He must be absolutely loving it so far. And I know Matt Ishbia as well made his prediction before the season that the Suns would be better than they were last year. They've been a lot better, not just like in the win losses. Yeah. I mean, the Suns right now are in the top eight in the Western Conference, but in terms of the likability aspect, they're just such a likable team.
Yes.
The bench energy from this group. I mean, this like when you're down eight with, 70 seconds to go in a game, that takes spirit and belief in each other in order to win a game like that. And so for Phoenix to, you know, to get off to this start and play the way they have, Colin Gillespie, man, how good is he, dude? I cannot believe how good Gillespie is to start off this year for the Suns. He's a really good college player. Those really good college players don't always translate in the way he has, but he looks like exactly the way he did in college. It's crazy.
Yeah, plays a little chip on his shoulder because we were trying to guess, and I think it did come out that Gillespie was the guy that went up to Dylan Brooks at the outset of the season and said, I'm the guy that, you know, wants to play like you, and Dylan Brooks was being a little coy with whoever said it. And you can kind of see it a little bit in him as well when he does play.
Yeah, averaging 11 points per game and 25 minutes off the bench for the Suns so far this year. Looking like a six-man candidate for sure. Termini, thank you so much for joining me today, man. Please let people know where they can hear your show.
They can hear it, KOC, on Sirius XM, NBA Radio, the NBA app, and NBA TV. So you've got three different entities you can pick it up on from 4 to 7 Eastern time. So 4 to 7 Eastern time, Termini Johnson, Sirius XM, NBA Radio, the NBA app, and on NBA TV.
Termini, thank you so much for joining me. We got to do this again sometime.
Thanks for having him on. And you got to come on as well, because I will say, like, we were throwing up a couple of tweets. You tweet and Eddie Johnson goes at you a lot. Does he go at you?
I love him going at me. I love him going. Sometimes I respond. Sometimes I just don't. I don't always. But I love Eddie going at me. We get to go at each other.
I don't even follow him.
On the radio.
I don't even follow him on Twitter. I can't do it. It's too stressful. We've blocked each other multiple times. There's a rule at work. We're not allowed to tweet to each other. Like, we're not allowed to.
Really? Leave it all for the show. Right.
Not well. I mean, we could sell it that way, but I think it's because they're afraid we're embarrassing the company by the way we're bickering on. You know, at least like you say it on the air, it disappears 5 seconds later. You write it on Twitter. You either have to erase it or it's out there for, you know, and then people take the screenshot and it's like, oh, look at this 66-year-old guy arguing with this 44-year-old guy. 2-1 stable idiots. What type of people is Sirius hiring?
Hey, well, I mean, like you said, being on social media sure makes you feel smart, gives you some self-confidence.
I'm the clay, by the way, in these back and forths. He's the John Morant.
Thank you so much, Termini. Have a good one.
All right, KOC. Thanks a lot, buddy.
All right. Thank you to Termini for joining me. Now we have Kelly Eco talking about his report about LaMelo Ball. All right, now joining me from Yahoo Sports, Kelly Eco. Kelly, how are you?
Doing good, man. What's up, KLC?
I'm doing good, man. Over the weekend, you had reported that Hornets star guard LaMelo Ball has grown increasingly frustrated with the Hornets and is open to a trade. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you're hearing about the status of LaMelo Ball?
Yeah, so, you know, prior to the beginning of the year, you know, head coach Charles Lee had this expansive system in place. He wanted to have a three-headed monster of LaMelo Ball, Miles Bridges, Brandon Miller, just playing off each other, more pick and rolls, more driving kicks, just a free-flowing offense. And to everyone's surprise, sarcastically, it hasn't worked. You know, this is, they're 4-13. They've been, you know, down-hitting by injuries, and they're, I think, 20th in offense, 21st in defense. The half-court execution has not been great, and it's hard to get any sort of consistency when your stars are out for extended periods of time, and you can't get any consistency going. So that's grown to the frustration, the losses, the usage, the style of play, and that's culminated in what I reported over the weekend.
So with LaMelo, I mean, it's so early in the season at this point. I mean, I would hope things can turn around for Charlotte. I mean, it's an encouraging start for Con Knipple. Some of their young guys do look good so far. Brandon Miller can't stay on the floor. You know, LaMelo on and off the floor as well. There's a lot that aren't going right so far for the Hornets, so it would be understandable to be frustrated so far. LaMelo, of course, unsurprisingly, you know, came out and pushed back against your report. He posted the clown emoji as a quote of it, and he talked in front of the media, and he said, quote, "He never heard that come from me. The source is not from me. It's false info." And he later went on to say, "I love being here. I'm so confident in this group and everybody here." He's rocking with it. He said, what are your thoughts on the immediate response from LaMelo?
I mean, it's understandable. I mean, I've been in this game a long time. You understand, star player is frustrated, report comes out, star player denies it. And in the middle of the night, weeks down the line, months down the line, when he's traded, no one circles back to it. So I wasn't fazed. I wasn't surprised by it. I knew it was coming. It's the politics of it all. So it wasn't a surprise to me.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think for the Hornets right now in the situation with LaMelo, I think if I'm in the Hornets front office, Kelly, I would play this slow. You know, I would just deal with these bumps at this point. And, you know, if whether or not in February LaMelo wants to be traded or not, to me, I'm looking at the situation as in saying, I want to see LaMelo, Brandon Miller, and Con Knipple on the floor for a sustained period of time to see how that looks. Because I'm like holding on to what LaMelo was a handful of years back. I mean, the guy looked like he was on an all NBA trajectory at one point, and I want to see how that looks. If I'm the Hornets, I wouldn't want to pull the plug on that yet, because I don't think any return for LaMelo would be great at this point either. I want to see how it looks with these guys, because Con Knipple's been so freaking good, man. He's a borderline all-star in the East. And so if you can get LaMelo back to that all-star point, and if Brandon Miller can become the guy that you hope he can be and has shown flashes of being, like, suddenly the Hornets could start looking pretty competent, a lot better than 4-13.
Yeah. So, and I think going back to what you said about Con Knipple, his excellence to start the year has been, I guess, the shining light in what has been a dreary season, right? Like, it's been, and it's actually a shout out to this rookie class, because every week we've been talking about, this guy is rookie of the year. It was Cedric Coward 1 week, then it was Con Knipple, then it was VJ Edgecombe, then it was Cooper Flagg. All these rookies have been playing out of their lights. And for Con, the most surprising thing to me has been his rebounding rate. He's averaging over around 7 rebounds a game this month. His rebound rate is like 16% for a wing as a rookie, which is impressive. And just the floor spacing alone, that's why you see kind of why if you're the Hornets, you do want to see what it looks like with LaMelo Ball, Miles Bridges, Brandon Miller, and Con Knipple on the floor in this super small, super pacey, driving kick, pace and space kind of lineup. But up to this point, they haven't been able to get any kind of injury consistency, so it's been pretty frustrating.
Yeah, for sure. It ultimately is. I mean, it's funny with Con Knipple, right? Because, you know, he, when I had him on my pod earlier this year, he said, "I love to play like Klay Thompson." And he does. Like, he's the best shooting prospect to enter the NBA in a long time. And he's an elite shooter. And he, very much like Klay, with the stuff that he can do off the catch, off of movement and all that. But he's running 8 pick and rolls per game, which is something Klay Thompson never did in his entire career. He never ran eight pick and rolls per game. And that Colin Knipple is doing that in the first month of his NBA career. And I would expect the Hornets, especially for as long as Miller's out, with as long as LaMelo Ball is on and off the floor, in and out sometimes, that usage for Colin Knipple, he looks so good running ball screens. And I think increasing that usage over the course of time, I'm not saying you'll see point Colin Knipple someday, but in a league where like not every team is, you know, building around one star, one heavy usage star, right, Colin Knipple deserves an even higher usage on ball. I think he's something different than Klay Thompson. I think he's Klay plus a better handle. And I think for the Hornets moving forward, with or without LaMelo, with or without a healthy Brandon Miller, that's something they need to invest in more moving forward, this individual rookie season for Colin Knipple.
Yeah, and that's to what you said. It's a credit to Charles Lee, right? He came in from Milwaukee and he understood that to emphasize his offensive players, you had to give them more empowerment. Starts with Brandon Miller becoming more of a confident ball handler, driver, distributor. Colin Knipple, putting him in more pick and rolls to open up the floor for him because he's a deadly shooter. And if he can become more of a distributor, I think this season he's like 13% in assist rate for wings, which is impressive for a rookie. Just putting him, having more confidence around him, allowing him more empowerment, more space, more pace, and just showing what he can do in that kind of system. Now, obviously, they haven't had the guys around them to fully see what the big picture looks like. But I think putting him in more pick and rolls, allowing him to be more of a driver distributor, can develop him really quickly, and is the reason why he's probably the front runner for Rookie of the Year right now.
I mean, it's borderline 50, 40, 90 at this point. And it's pretty remarkable what he's doing. And in terms of LaMelo Ball, bringing it back to him, one of the reasons why I'd play this very, very slowly if I'm the Hornets is because I don't think there's a lot of teams out there that would even want LaMelo right now. I can only come up with four teams that make sense on paper for LaMelo Ball. The Pelicans, you know, maybe you get rid of DeJounte Murray as he recovers from a torn Achilles, or Jordan Poole or some other combination. Maybe they'd want to buy low on LaMelo. The Kings, another buy low. They got a lot of contracts they can put together. They have picks they can put together. That could make some sense. The Wizards, again, another buy low situation, like trade Chris Middleton or CJ McCollum, a veteran with picks or upside players. But the one that's my favorite is the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors, as good as they've been so far this season, the one area maybe you can improve on is Emmanuel Quickley. And so maybe put together a trade with Quickley, Jacoby Walters, and a future picks package for LaMelo. Maybe this is a type of trade with Walter and Quickley that you raise your ceiling with LaMelo, even though you also raise your risk, because Quickley is a good player, but LaMelo can reach greater heights. Do you like this idea? Do you think there's something, you know, along these lines that would make some sense, Kelly?
Yeah, I think the Raptors one is intriguing because if you were to have LaMelo Ball playing alongside Brandon Ingram, now you have two score playmakers that you can play off of each other. You can even use LaMelo as a screener for inverted pick and rolls with Brandon Ingram, and just trying to see what that looks like. And the Raptors have been a great story to start this season. They've been fun. They've been bright. They've been fast, energetic. To bring in LaMelo Ball, a guy that has struggled with injuries, but when healthy, he is one of the most electric players this game has to see. That's a pretty interesting package. My only question was, if the Hornets are going to deal LaMelo, how much, what is the market for him in terms of first round picks, pick swaps, you know, protections? What does that look like? But I think Quickley, Walter, and picks, that's a good base. I would think that Charlotte would ask for maybe a bit more if they were to move on for LaMelo, because he's still pretty young. He still hasn't even reached his prime yet. But, you know, LaMelo on Toronto would be, you know, NBA Twitter's dream.
Yeah, 24 years old right now, LaMelo is in year two of a 5-year contract. And so Charlotte has time to definitely play this slow, and I think they definitely should. Let's talk about the Rockets. Kevin Durant, they have games against the Phoenix Suns and Golden State Warriors this week. And KD, he's going to be out, Kelly, because of family issues, as been reported. What a bummer. What a bummer. Two road games against his former teams, the Suns and the Warriors. Come on. This is so disappointing as a fan.
Yeah. Yeah, and especially, you know, the storylines about why he left Phoenix, why he didn't want to go back to Golden State, the way the Rockets have been playing this season with Kevin, to bring him into the Phoenix today would have been a treat for fans just to see, you know, what that looks like. You know, the whole thing about the leadership and the Suns' new direction with Dylan Brooks, Devin Booker, those guys around there, and just seeing how those two teams clash. The Rockets coming off of a loss against Denver. And then everyone knows going back to Golden State, Draymond Green, that's always going to be a story in itself. So it's a real bummer for NBA fans, but it's still a good thing to see how the Rockets look without Kevin Durant in the short period of time.
What do you want to see from Houston in these two games without KD?
So the biggest thing for me, if you look at the numbers, when Kevin Durant is off the floor, their three-point rate rises by almost 15%. And some of that is a product of you absorb what Kevin Durant is, a mid-range aficionado, and someone that's more deliberate in action, trying to get those pick-and-pop jumpers. Now, without him on the floor, you can lean more into Reed Shepard as a three-point threat. I know against Denver, the minute KD was off the floor, the Rockets ran Reed off of screens, they flowed into a pick-and-roll with Steven Adams, and just allowed him to launch as many threes as he wanted. So I think you want to see more of that. Reed Shepard has been shooting the lights out, I think shooting almost 50% on six threes a game. That's underrated candidate for most improved player of the year. You get to see more Alperen Şengün post-ups and just trying to see what that spacing looks like. Now, you know, Durant's absence is going to be felt because Ime likes to play KD for almost the entire first quarter, so you have to adjust to that. Defensively, it's going to be a loss as well because you are now down Durant and Tari Eason, who are two of Houston's, you know, longest defenders. So you have to accompany for that. I think they're going to play more man-to-man defense, allow guys to stick to their assignments more because you can't really trust the zone without those guys, you know, as protection. But I do think it's going to be a chance for people to see what Reed Shepard looks like with a green light. I think he is their best shooter right now. They need to lean into everything he brings to the table, developing right now at this rate. And I think Rockets fans should expect to see maybe an uptick in pace per game and more Reed threes.
You mentioned the 3-point rate differential with KD versus right. without KD. It's 29.6% right. of their shots are threes with KD to 43.5% without KD on the floor. And like, this is the thing that to me is like so exciting about this Rockets team is how many, just by adding KD and also with the improvement of their youth, the Reed Shepard, Amen Thompson, Alperen Şengün, the team complexion offensively has changed dramatically. And so I think this is like, from a fan standpoint, it sucks. You don't get to see KD face off against the Suns. Like, it's a good, fun Suns team so far this year, or against the Warriors. That sucks. But from like basketball analyst standpoint, I'm very excited to see the way this team operates. I am. I mean, like, I think there's a chance this team just keeps clicking. That because they have just so many different ways that they can play and so many different ways that they can generate offense already this season. They can play with two bigs. They can play with one big. They can play with heavy with three-pointers. They can play with a lot of mid-range. Yeah. And so I think that's what I'm really looking forward to is, does this team continue to flourish offensively even without one of the greatest scorers of all time and Kevin Durant still playing at a high level? I think they can. I really do think they can. Like, this could be the week where Reed Shepard has his 35-point game or Alperen Şengün drops right. 45. This could be that week where it's like, oh, you know, these guys aren't just, you know, taking a little leap. This is a big leap from some of these guys. And so I'm very excited from that standpoint, Kelly.
A question for you, KOC, in specifically about Reed. Do you think it's more beneficial for them to move forward in these games playing him alongside Aaron Holiday, another smaller guard? Or do you think they should just lean into the double big stuff, allow Reed to have optimal screening angles from Şengün, Adams, Capella, even Amen Thompson to screen it? What do you think is the best usage of that going forward?
I mean, I think like with Aaron Holiday, solid, you know, veteran, young veteran role player. But with Reed Shepard, I think whatever is maximizing the amount of three-pointers that dude can take. I think when in the first half of his game Friday against Denver, yeah. You know, Adams is the screener creating space for him. Shepard's averaging 5.9 three-pointers per game. so far this year. They got to get that guy closer to 8 or 9 per game, whether it's off the catch, off of screens and handoffs, or whether it is off the dribble, out of pick and roll situations. They have to get that usage up, because I think, you know, with Reed so far this year, he's 48.8% on 5.9 threes. He's made 40 of his 82 attempts. That's crazy, right? It's like not just all open shots. A lot of those heavily contested too. And so, like, he's back to doing what he did at Kentucky offensively. He's back to doing what he did at Kentucky defensively as a playmaker as well, off the ball with rotations and deflections and steals. He looks like the Kentucky version of himself that made himself the number 3 pick in the draft, top ranked on my board. We'll see over time if that ends up being the right choice or not. And I know he was number 1 on Houston's board as well. We'll see if that was the correct choice. So with Reed Sheppard, getting him more shots, Kelly, like the too big next to Holiday, I don't care. Whatever gets him more shot opportunities, to me, that's going to be a goal for the Rockets. And, you know, we talked about this last week on my pod. I think it was a show with Tom where it's like, you know, Fred VanVleet goes down. You know, you and I talked about this before the season when I had you on. And, like, you don't know what it's going to look like. I was optimistic about what Reed Sheppard and Amen Thompson could be with more opportunity. I was optimistic about Alperen Şengün, but it's happening way sooner than I ever anticipated for these guys to be looking as good as they are. This is way quicker than I anticipated. I thought maybe by like February, Reed Sheppard would be crushing, and then Alperen Şengün would be looking like all NBA. This is ahead of schedule. Yes, very much.
It's ahead of schedule. And I think going back to what the Rockets anticipated for Reed, you know, coming out of the draft, was to become this version of himself that we're seeing now. Someone that's uber confident. Their biggest thing, they used to get on him every day for not taking more threes. He would defer too much. And they said, they drafted you to be a sniper, so go and do that. And now you're seeing what that looks like. And then going back to the usage, he needs to take at least maybe 4 or 5 more threes a game. I think Konkanepo's averaging almost 9, and Reed is at almost 6, barely hitting 6. You need to take at least 3 to 4 more a game to give yourself a chance if you're the Rockets right now trying to hang without Kevin Durant in the interim. But Reed has looked fantastic. He's getting those angles. He's pulling up more. He's chirping back at players at the bench. He looks a whole different player than the guy we saw as a rookie last season. So I think all credit to the coaching staff for putting him in that position. All credit to Reed himself for obviously understanding where he needed to improve on. Now it's going to be, this is the best test to see what that looks like in the immediate future.
I can't wait. Good test so far this coming week for the Rockets. On Monday against the Suns, on Wednesday against the Warriors, and then they have 2 games in Utah on Sunday and Monday. So we'll see if KD's back in time for those. Kelly, thank you so much for joining me today, man. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks, Kelsey. Anytime.
All right, now talking to me to join a little bit of NBA and then some college basketball, Ricky O'Donnell from SB Nation. Ricky, how are you?
I'm good, Kevin. Thanks for having me on.
All right, let's talk about Jalen Johnson lead off here. Trae Young goes out. Jalen Johnson turns into one of the best players in the game. That's what has happened so far with the Atlanta Hawks. He is just on an absolute tear right now, basically averaging nearly a triple-double over his last 7 games, at 28 points, 8 boards, 11 assists in his last game. This is becoming a nightly thing for Jalen Johnson at this point now, at 23 years old in his NBA career in year 6. After he barely played at Duke a few years back, his freshman year. This is the best case scenario, Ricky, what he's become so far with Atlanta this year.
Totally. I always believed in Jalen Johnson's talent. And while I have a lot of draft misses on my resume over the years as someone who's covered the draft for more than a decade at SB Nation, I did believe in Jalen Johnson. I had him top 10 on my 2021 draft board, even though he left Duke in February of that season for reasons that were like sort of unclear. He really just wanted to train for the draft. And while he fell on draft night to number 20 overall, he landed in a perfect situation with Atlanta. And I think we're seeing the full scope of his talent right now with Trae Young out. Atlanta's been better on both ends of the floor since Trae Young has been sidelined with injury, and Johnson's ascent is a main reason why. To me, this guy's just like the prototypical modern power forward in the NBA. He's an absolutely monster transition scorer. He impacts the game on the glass. He's improved his three-point shot. He's 40% this year on low volume. And he's someone who can just really create with the ball in his hands. at 6'9", 230 pounds. He's just going to be too big for a lot of defenders. I think you saw last night in that Hornets game, you know, the Hornets tried to put a guard on him at times with Colin Sexton, and Jalen Johnson was just completely bullying him. He's just way too big and too fast for a guard to match up with him. So I think Jalen Johnson has been awesome. He's really like the template for what you want out of an NBA four these days. And, you know, he's taken his game to new heights since Trey's been out.
Yeah, I felt like he was an all-star last year before he got injured. And this year, he's definitely an all-star. He belongs in the NBA, all-NBA conversation as well if he continues sustaining this. I mean, look, dude, the scoring, you mentioned the mismatch problem that he is. He's too big for smaller guards. He's too fast for larger defenders. His versatility is incredible on that on offense, and then but also the playmaking ability. 11 assists, zero turnovers in that game against the Hornets. You know, that's an outlier for him. He has 4, 5, 6 turnovers in every game prior to that during this hot stretch. But point being is that this is a guy who could put the ball in his hands and he can create for others as well, whether it's out of pick and roll, whether it's attacking closeouts, whether it's as a elbow hub. He can be plugged and plug and played into different positions on the floor. And I think that's what you're seeing with the Hawks right now. Is without Trae Young, they're playing this diverse style of offense in the half court that's making them look like a better overall team. And it's going to make things very, very interesting once Trae Young does end up returning to the floor at some point this season. Let's move on to a guy that you wrote about this year, this week, I believe, on SB Nation. Who is, people are watching the Pistons right now. They might be saying, who's number 24 on the Pistons? Who is this guy? Ricky, can you explain who number 24 is on the Pistons?
Yeah, Danis Jenkins, man. I think that he's just been a revelation in the early portion of the season. And suddenly the Pistons, to me, look like they have some of the best depth in the NBA. One of the reasons why is Danis Jenkins has emerged after the Pistons lost Dennis Schroeder last year in free agency. They lose Jaden Ivey to injury at the start of the year. Ivey now rejoining the lineup. We'll see what happens to Jenkins' role with Ivy back. But, man, Jenkins has shown enough to deserve some minutes here for the Pistons going forward. I just think he has a great story. He's someone who committed to Damon Stoudemire in Pacific out of high school. Then when Damon Stoudemire went to become the Celtics assistant head coach, he went to JUCO. And at the JUCO level, Rick Pitino found him, brought him to Iona. And Pitino, man, just what a legend. Like, you look back at Pitino's Iona teams when he was trying to rebuild his reputation coming out of the Louisville scandal. He's got two NBA guards in the backcourt, Walter Clayton Jr. and Danis Jenkins. Only Pitino could pull that off, you know, taking a football recruit in Walter Clayton and taking a JUCO guy in Danis Jenkins. And after a pretty good year following Pitino at St. John's, went undrafted, but he's really grinded his way into a nice career through the G League, now in his second season as a pro. Just looks super comfortable. And I love his slashing ability, as you're seeing the highlights here on the screen. I don't think that he's like the burstiest guard, and he's not someone who's like overpowering anyone with strength, but he just knows how to get to his spots. He's got really nice touch on his layups, very good at extending his finishes. And his defensive impact is there too. And I feel like if you're going to be a guy who's trying to make a career for yourself as an undrafted free agent, you have to be impactful on the defensive end. He's been very good there. He also positively impacts the possession game on the glass. He's one of the better rebounders for a guy his size. So I just really like everything Jenkins is bringing to the table. And now you look at this Pistons rotation, they got guys like Javonte Green, Paul Reed, and Jenkins making contributions as part of their deep bench. This team looks pretty legit to me, and I guess my analysis of the Pistons is that the team's very much built around Cade Cunningham and Jalen Duren, and Cade is certainly powering their success, and Duren's just been incredible this year, but I really think that like it's more of a full team effort than one or two guys leading the show, and Jenkins has been a part of that.
You know, JB Bickerstaff, after their most recent game, I think it was Sunday against the Bucks, he said he plans to stick with a 12-man rotation, at least in the first half of games. Like, that's a testament to the team right now. I mean, they legitimately are 12 deep. They have a lot of NBA quality talents when you have Danis Jenkins doing what he's doing, you know, with the opportunity, and then Jaden Ivey coming back. At some point, you know, maybe you trim that rotation down, Ricky, but at the same time, I mean, what did we just see with Indiana and OKC? These teams going deep into their bench. Indiana full court press the whole game. Not that Detroit's doing that, but playing with high intensity and short burst, this could be part of the formula and could be one of the reasons why Detroit is able to sustain success, because they are so deep, because they can play so intense, you know, when they are out on the floor full throttle for 15, 20 minutes for some of these guys. Maybe some guys it ends up being 25 minutes per game, but not having to play your stars for 40 minutes can also increase their effectiveness over the full duration of the season as well. I mean, in their win against the Bucks, you know, only Cade was over 30 minutes of the starters. He had 33. Every other starter had below 30 minutes in the game. So I think for Detroit and JB Bickerstaff, it's a good problem to have when you have too many good NBA players. And that's what it looks like right now with Danish Jenkins doing what he's doing. And dude, I can't fathom just how instant it was, though, with him. I mean, you mentioned in your story you wrote on SB Nation, you know, the shooting from three was up and down for him in college, but he's hitting 47% of his threes so far this season. It's probably not sustainable, but he had the game-tying three-pointer in the closing seconds against the Wizards last week as well. He's hitting threes and pull-up jumpers, heavily contested, you know, from mid-range, fadeaways and sidestep. It's not like he's just hitting open shots and accumulating volume. He's generating his own buckets and hitting tough, contested shots. I mean, like, it's like, if you didn't, that's why I say, like, who's number 24 as a joke? Because if you have no idea who he is, you would think this dude's a superstar. The types of mid-rangers he's hitting, it's just so crazy to see a guy doing that out of nowhere. And what a story it is for Detroit.
Totally, man. And I remember watching him in summer league this year when he played Reed Shepard in the Rockets, because I wanted to check in on Reed in his second year. And Danish Jenkins completely popped in that game. And you never really know if you see a guy pop in summer league, like if it's going to translate to NBA regular season basketball. Usually it doesn't.
That's for sure.
But with Jenkins,
especially for guards, right, Ricky? Like, for guards, it doesn't always.
For sure. But he's someone who, his ability to make an impact in the possession game just by forcing steals, getting rebounds, I think sort of endears himself to getting minutes as a dude without any pedigree like him. And then, like you said, when you're able to just be on fire with your shooting touch lately, I think he deserves minutes the rest of the year. We'll see how Bickerstaff handles that rotation. And I'm sure everyone's going to be talking about a potential consolidation trade for another all-star level player for the Pistons. Hey, it's a good choice to have. You can either go with depth if you want to ride it out this year, or you could put some of your chips on the table and maybe get a guy like Lauri Markkanen or Michael Porter Jr. or someone else who could help him for the playoff run.
Yeah, one of those guys, Trey Murphy, something like that makes total sense. An upgrade over Tobias Harris. You're a Chicago Bulls rookie. People don't know you are a Bulls fan and also a Bulls analyst. You always do great work covering them both on social media and on SB Nation. The Bulls, they had a win on Saturday against the Wizards. And if people, you know, were too busy with their weekends, they may not have seen at the end of the game, Vooch was getting interviewed post-game, and Modest Buzelis and Jalen Smith are dancing and having fun in the background. And Vooch, big curmudgeon. It's like, this is not funny. This is no time for laughs and smiles, basically is how he reacted. Both did get the win. They've sputtered as of late. He probably feels like they shouldn't have beaten the way by 1 point, but ultimately they did get the dub. Which side are you on here, Ricky? Are you on the side of Vooch or Jalen Smith and Modest Buzelis having a good time as kids in the NBA getting a dub?
That was the most I've liked Vooch in 5 years, I think, because he was totally right. The Bulls' effort in that game was completely pathetic against the Wizards team that I think entered at like 1-14. The Bulls should not need to go down to the last play of the game to beat the Wizards, and they won that game because Trey Jones made a terrific gamble defensively to force a steal. If he doesn't get that steal, the Bulls lose that game to the Wizards in horrifying fashion. So I'm totally with Vooch. They played like trash. They still somehow won. So, you know, you turn the page and you go on. But Bulls 9-7 right now. They're the only team in the NBA above 500 with a negative point differential. They have played a really tough schedule, though, up to this point, without Coby White, who is just now rejoining the rotation, still on a minutes limit. Should be their best player, you would think, coming into the season. So, you know, are the Bulls good? I don't really think they're good. But they have hung tough through a difficult portion of the schedule without Kobe. Now the schedule is really easy. And you look at who they have coming up. All right, they play the Pelicans tonight. They got the Hornets coming up. They play some games against the Nets. Like, they could hypothetically run off like a, you know, 6 wins in 7 games stretch here. if they're actually a decent team, and we'll see. And what scares me about the Bulls, though, and the reason I'm not really believing in it at the moment, is that every night they're losing the possession game. And I feel like they're at a talent disadvantage coming into these games anyway, with their best player being Josh Giddey or maybe Kobe. Some nights it's Vooch. Similar to the Pistons, they're a team that definitely is relying on their depth to sort of carry them when their starters can't. But Jared Dubin, the NBA writer, put out a nice little formula for calculating the possession game. And I noticed that on his first update, the Bulls were, you know, losing by like four possessions a game. I ran the numbers again, and now it's like six possessions a game. So if you're going to be the less talented team, you can't be getting smoked in turnovers and offensive rebounds every single game, even when you're playing the Jazz and the Wizards and the Trailblazers just crushed them on the offensive glass. So for the Bulls right now, I feel like they go as Vooch goes. When Vooch is on and he's ripping threes and they're going five out all 48 minutes with him and Jalen Smith in the lineup, they can be pretty tough to defend. Jalen Smith has been awesome. He's had a career year on a per possession basis. Io, very good. Josh Giddey looks like an all-star. I got to take a big L on that one because I was a major Giddey skeptic last year after the trade, but he's been really good. We'll see if they can sustain it. There's definitely an opportunity in the East for a team to like move up into the playoff picture, but you know, you got to rebound if you're going to be the Bulls, and you can't be turning the ball over all the time. So if they clean up some of those little things, potentially they could go on a run, but we'll see.
I think with them, this upcoming schedule for the Bulls, they definitely are in a position to win some games. They have Pelicans, Hornets, Pacers, Magic on the road, and then at home, Nets, Pacers, and that's before a tough stretch begins. So they have some very winnable games coming up. We'll be right back. Enough NBA today. Let's talk about the NBA draft. All right, Ricky, time for draft class. Let's get started with some lottery lessons here in the NBA draft. What comes to mind for you for a lottery lesson from this past week?
Interesting. Yeah, I kind of like Hans Steinbach from Washington, is a guy who I think has sort of like moved up on my board throughout the course of the season. He's just an interesting player as a dude who, like, is he a five? Is he a four? I'm not sure, but he has a truly elite skill with his offensive rebounding. And this guy can just clean the glass as well as anybody in the country right now. Just as the possession game has become more and more important coming off last year's finals, I feel like a guy who you know is going to be elite in that area is just something you can sort of bank on. I do have some questions about him. For example, can he anchor a defense as a five? I don't know. Otherwise, as a four, he's probably got to play next to a stretch five. There's more of those guys every year, but there's still not a lot of them in the NBA. So positionally, he could be a tough fit, but I just like a lot about Steinbach in general. You know, about 6'10 with a 7'2 wingspan. So he's got decent size, if nothing else. He's got a really tough schedule coming up. Like, he's going to play UCLA on Wednesday. Then he's got Purdue, Michigan, Illinois. So he's going to be tested quite a bit. I like just his motor. I think the NBA has become a motor league. That's one of my takeaways watching, you know, the last couple seasons of the league. I love that he just combines sort of like high intensity on both ends of the floor while also having a pretty good feel. Like, that intersection of motor and feel, very tough to find in the league. And when you have a guy who has that with plus size, generally pretty good. He really opened my eyes in the FIBA U19 World Cup playing for Germany alongside Texas Tech's Christian Anderson over the summer. He was awesome in that, leading Germany to the silver medal. So I just like that he has a signature skill with his rebounding. I think his shot is definitely going to have to come around because he's probably more of a four than a five to me. But in general, I like what I've seen from him, and it's going to be awesome to watch 10 because there's not going to be a lot of off nights with the way the conference is now.
Now with him, it's interesting because I think you're spot on about the rebounding, spot on about the motor, and that's enough to give you a chance in the NBA. Like, that is at a minimum what you want out of a big man, and that's going to earn you minutes and opportunity. Offensively, to your point about the shooting ability, you know, so far this season he has made his 2 of 3 from three. I mean, he's only 62% from the free throw line, more consistent with what he was, you know, at prior levels. If you're not going to be a shooter, it's important for you as a big to be a quality screener and playmaker. Where do you think it is in those categories as a facilitating big man?
Yeah, I think he's solid. I definitely want to continue to evaluate him in those areas as the season goes on. Like you said, it's only been a handful of games so far. Not a lot of competition to this point on a schedule other than Baylor, but I like that he just has a lot of downhill gravity when he's attacking the paint. In FIBA and in the German levels, he was just dunking everything. And we haven't really seen that translate in the early portion of the schedule, but he's just such a big body and moves pretty well that I think that, you know, he should be able to be a pretty good rim scorer, especially at the college level. And then in terms of the passing, I just want to like see that more. Like, can he make plays on the short roll? I think that's something he's definitely going to have to do. It's either that or space the floor for him to really carve out an NBA lane. But I like his defense too, because he's someone who, like, you can't bully him one-on-one. He moves his feet pretty well. I think he's a pretty intelligent defender in terms of knowing when to help and, you know, when to stay at home. His weak side rim protection looked pretty good at the FIBA level. So, yeah, he's definitely got some questions. Like, I wish he was a little bigger and you could think of him as a full-time five. I think he's probably more of a four, but man, look around the league. There's all these two big lineups now, and it just feels like after looking at the Rockets' hot start to the season and the way the offensive glass affects the playoffs every year, that if you have someone with a special skill like that, potentially they deserve lottery consideration. And I liked the top of this draft a lot. I think it's just amazing, as everyone else does. But the second half of the lottery, definitely still a lot of room for guys to move up, especially in November as we talk about this right now. And he's someone who's caught my eye, as a guy who I think can move up into those lottery discussions as the season goes on.
Yeah, I think he's a perfect example of a guy where, like, in this year's draft class, as you said, there's a pretty clear-cut top of the lottery. And then after that, it's like, well, we'll see. I mean, it could be a lot of different guys that end up in the 7 to 14 range for the lottery, and he's absolutely one of them. Jaden Quaintance from Kentucky is another one that I'm hoping we get to see at some point soon this season. Mark Pope, the Kentucky head coach, had said that Quaintance played in 2v2 live drills for the first scout team over the weekend. And so, you know, Mark Pope had a quote where he said, "I almost had a heart attack because I thought he just snuck into the drill, but it was like, nope, he's good. He's clear. He's making terrific progress." So hopefully we see Quaintance very soon, because you talk about energetic, versatile bigs. Quaintance kind of fits that category too. So hopefully we get to see Quaintance at some points early on the season for Kentucky.
He's nasty. Can't wait to see him. And Kentucky needs him. They already got two losses. Looks like Mark Pope, his team's almost like too deep. He doesn't know what players to play or how the lineup should be balanced. But Quentin should be his best player when he comes back. And I would have taken this kid with a top five pick last year as a 17-year-old freshman coming out of Arizona State. You just don't see big men with his combination of length, strength, and mobility. Now he's a little bit shorter for an NBA five. He's like 6'9", but he's got like a 7'5 wingspan. So he plays so much bigger than his listed height. I just think defensively he's potentially special. Like, he could play a lot of different types of pick and roll coverage for you. I think that's super important when you're drafting a young defense first big man. And then I think offensively, definitely more questions. What does he do offensively is going to be the thing that I want to see this year at Kentucky. He doesn't really shoot it. He can be a little bit of like a playmaking hub, but you know, is an NBA team really going to use him as that? Unlikely. He's probably going to be like a dunker spot finisher and ideally like a short roll playmaker. I'm very interested in his offense, but defense, I think he could potentially be an elite coverage, versatile big man with fantastic shot blocking ability. And, you know, if you're picking in the second half of the lottery and you have an 18-year-old with those attributes, it's tough to beat that.
All right, let's move on to our weekly movers, guys we're higher or lower on after the early couple weeks here in the NBA season. Ricky, who is somebody that you're higher on after the first few weeks here of this college season?
I also like Ade Mara from Michigan. I was very interested in him coming into UCLA 2 years ago, had him as a projected top 10 pick in my, you know, very early 2023 mock draft. And then he didn't play for 2 years. Mick Cronin just could not find a spot on the floor for this guy, but transfers to Michigan this year for his third season in college. And I think that Mara just his physicality is so crazy. 7 foot three with a 7'7" wingspan. I talked about how Quaintance is coverage versatile. Ademara is not coverage versatile. He's going to be playing in a deep drop, but he's so long that he can really shrink the space between himself and the ball handler with his length. He's just been an awesome shot blocker. You're probably looking at a guy who's going to have like a 15% block rate at the college level this year, which is just crazy. And then offensively, definitely a little heavy. He reminds me a bit of Donovan Clingan, where it's like, can this guy play a lot of minutes? You know, can he actually get off the floor to score at the rim? But where I like him is as a passer, and his passing is just crazy. I mean, there was a play against TCU, I think, where he got double teamed at the basket, and he just threw this wild hook pass to the wing for a three for Yaxel Lendeborg. So he's made plays like that the whole year, like big outlet passes that are on the money that looks like Timberwolves Kevin Love hitting guys in stride like that. And the passing, the size, shot blocking, I think is all really interesting. To me, center is the weakest positional group in this 2026 draft, but there's still a lot of teams that need center. So I think that he's someone who probably outside of the lottery could move up, maybe 20-ish pick range, I think, for Ademara potentially could be fair. And, you know, this Michigan front court's loaded, man. Merez Johnson, an Illinois transfer. He's from my part of the world. I watched him since he was in high school. I think he could be an NBA player too, maybe a top 40, 45 pick this year. Everyone knows about Yaxel. He was unreal last year and is playing, you know, much better competition this season in the Big Ten. So love Michigan. They're going to be one of the best college teams to watch. And Mara's continued emergence is a big reason why.
I thought he was a lottery pick entering his freshman year at UCLA. And he underwhelmed. He wasn't so good there at UCLA. He didn't score well, didn't do much of anything well. And he also didn't get a lot of consistent heavy minutes as he is right now at Michigan. But he's a junior now. He's stronger now. He looks like a more developed version of himself. And he's a good example of how development is never linear. And with him, it was a dip after, you know, playing overseas and looking pretty good as a teenager, as a youth prospect, a dip at UCLA over 2 years. And now at Michigan, he's looking more like the guy that you hoped you would see when he was a freshman. As you said, the playmaking, the at-rim scoring, he's rebounding, he's looks better defensively, just overall more comfortable with his physical development. And another guy that I'm higher on so far this season is LeBaron Filon out of Alabama. He had some really good moments as a freshman, especially in minutes that he was playing without Mark Sears. But Filon so far this season, small sample, of course, but he's pretty much doubled up on all of his numbers so far this year, averaging 20.5 points per game, up from 10.6 last year. 5.8 assists, up from 3.8 last year, and his efficiency is up across the board. 3-point percentage up to 38.1%, at rim percentage 70.4%, true shooting overall 60.1%. Overall, Filon looks like a more developed version of himself, and he's doing it in tough games, clutch moments. We saw over the weekend against Illinois him coming up big down the stretch. He had a really good game against St. John's earlier in the month as well. Filon, I'm higher on. I was one of those like borderline lottery guys with him entering the season. I think he looks more like a clear-cut lottery guy so far this year. Would you agree with that?
I love Filon. He's my favorite player to watch probably in college. I was at that Illinois game and he was electric down the stretch. I feel like if you're a 10 or 11-year-old kid, LeBaron Filon is the type of player who makes you fall in love with basketball because he's just so quick off the bounce. His drive and kick ability is just absolutely awesome, and that should play in the NBA. I don't know if I'm higher on him this year, though, just because he's kind of small. And it's like, all right, if he's got an 8'6 standing reach, and what's he weigh, like 175 pounds? I mean, he's very thin, and he just doesn't have much mass to him. So I worry about that in the NBA a little bit, especially when you're talking about a guy who's going to be at the lottery level. I do think he's a first-round pick, no doubt about it. Just a little bit scared off by, like, he hasn't really added much mass to his frame this year. Totally agree with you on the skill set stuff. Like, he's transitioning from a secondary ball handler to a primary ball handler, and his efficiency is going up, and his shooting's going up. So that's awesome. Worry a little bit that he lives on tough floaters a bit too much, but, like, you know, that's part of the deal when you're going to be a small guard. Like, you can't always get all the way to the rim. You can't always get a free layup. Sometimes you got to be like Tony Parker and take that floater from 8 feet away. If you get that dialed in like he had last year, you know, that's a deadly shot that's very tough to stop. I just love his quickness off the bounce. I love his driving kick ability. He's really fun to watch. And, you know, Alabama, this schedule is maybe the best non-conference schedule I've ever seen. As we're talking right now, they're playing Gonzaga tonight. It's like no games off, going from St. John's to Illinois, now Gonzaga. They are getting tested so much before SEC play. And we know the SEC is arguably the best conference in the country. So I love the way Alabama is scheduled, and I love how Filon has been performing early in the season. You know, I just, it's fair to be a little skeptical of smaller guards at this point, I think, though.
Totally is. I think it's understandable for sure with a guy his size, and those guys don't always pan out, or they end up becoming, you know, quality role players, spark plug guards, but not worthy of lottery consideration. And we'll see. I think he made the right choice to go back to school. But we'll see where he ends up over the course of the year. And as you said, Alabama will be tested. Speaking of games to watch, last week I had Sam Vecenie on, and Sam had mentioned how excited he was to watch the Houston-Tennessee game on Tuesday. Nate Amendt going against that Houston defense. Big test for him to prove where he belongs in the NBA draft. Is there a game that you'll be watching this week, Ricky, besides that one?
Super pumped for Arkansas-Duke. You know, I had Cam Boozer as my preseason number one. Didn't think he looked that great against Kansas, like was a little, you know, worried about that game. But in general, I just still buy Boozer as just being a guy who brings so many winning plays to the table. You know, the issue is going to be finishing over length. And I think that Arkansas is going to be a really good matchup for him in that regard. They got Trevon Brazil, they got Nick Pringle, they got Malik Ewan. So just like a bunch of big bodies for him to battle inside. Want to see how explosive he looks, you know, finishing over that length. But I mean, the guy just brings so much to the table, even, you know, with maybe some athletic limitations. The passing is just really outstanding for him. And you just saw the way that he's able to pick apart double teams when he gets the ball in the post. You know, can just always find the open shooter. It seems like I want to see him play more with the ball in his hands. Like, I thought that he was going to sort of be like, you know, kind of an initiator, almost in the style that Jason Tatum is for the Celtics, like someone who you can put the ball in his hands and let him run isolations, let him run pick and rolls. He's certainly like not as nimble as someone like Tatum is, but he can just run over people with his, you know, power. So I really like Boozer. I think he's probably going to have to be a high-level shooter for him to really return, like, you know, number one overall value in this class. It's a great class with Darren Peterson and A.J. DeBonce as well. But I just love Boozer's processing. I love his all-around skill set. And to find someone who plays with that much power and who's that smart, I think is really, really rare. You just hope that he can finish over some of these bigger guys he's going to see in the NBA, because that's really going to unlock, you know, the next level of his upside to me. And Arkansas is a really good test for that early in the season with their front line.
Now, let's say I'm an NBA fan and our team has no chance of a top three pick in the draft this year. Like this year, you're seeing like Sion James give good minutes as an upperclassman from Duke as a rookie with the Hornets. Is there a guy for those fans to think about when they watch Duke games this year, kind of like these late first, second round pick level prospects on the Duke roster?
Yeah, I love the Duke center, Patrick Ngongba. He was elite in a really small role on Cooper Flagg's Duke team last year that went to the Final Four. This year, he's their starting center. And I just think he brings so much to the table, and he doesn't really take anything off the table. Like, 7'4" wingspan, big physical guy, plays very physically in the paint. He's not like a super bouncy athlete who's going to be slamming lobs all the time, but he's a pretty good shot blocker. He can get off the floor decently well, really good rebounder. I like his screen setting. And the thing that pops with him is the passing. He's just able to hit these cutters just on a dime. Like, he's just leading his receivers perfectly as a passer. Duke opened their Champions Classic game with him, you know, throwing a high post feed to Boozer, which was really pretty. And he's been doing that throughout the year. So I think he's one of the better center prospects in this class. He doesn't really have the pedigree that some of his competitors do. He doesn't really like pop physically to me, but he's just a really solid basketball player in all areas. He does the things you want a big man to do. And I just think that's like an underrated component, especially when you're looking at a guy outside of the lottery.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a great example where he has a baseline of things that are will make him a quality NBA rotation big man, or should make him a quality rotation NBA big. But the playmaking on top of that, where he's like a good quality passer, and you know, anytime I see a big man that's shooting, you know, 76-77% from the free throw line, in the back of my mind, Ricky, I'm always like, huh, is there a chance he ever develops like a standstill three-pointer at the top of the key or the corners? It's like, that's just always something in the back of my mind with a guy like him, when you look forward to what he could be in year seven in the NBA down the line. Like Isaiah Evans is another one. Very small, like he's lean right now, but I hope over time he'll continue to add some muscle to that frame. He's only 180 pounds right now, but sharp shooter for Duke. He's a guy that I think late first round, early second round, people should keep an eye on as well. And I don't think he's going to come out of the draft this year, but I love Caden Boozer too, man. Cam Boozer's younger brother, not younger brother, but like, you know, his smaller brother, I should say. Shorter brother, Caden Boozer. He's a quality player, man. I feel like the team just clicks when he's on the floor out there. The ball moves better. I like him more than Caleb Foster. Caden Boozer, another guy that I just think he's going to have an NBA future at some point. Whether he stays 3 years at Duke or only 1 year, that's what remains to be seen. But Caden Boozer, another guy to watch too, for sure.
Play him more. When the Boozers are together, they're basically unstoppable. Those guys had the greatest resume of winning at the high school level, possibly of all time, just championship in every league they were ever played in. So yeah, play him more. I think that playing Caden more with Cameron will help Cameron take his game to the next level. You didn't even mention Dame Sarr, who's like a 6'8 wing who has just ridiculous athletic burst. I mean, he is one of the fastest players in this draft class, I think. And he's 6'8 with a 7-foot wingspan. So still got to learn how to play basketball, I think, in a lot of ways. But the physical tools, really intriguing. Duke was my national title pick. I mean, I want to see him this year continue to maximize Boozer, but I think they're a really talented team.
Yeah, absolutely. They very much are. Very fun to watch, and that's a good test for them against Arkansas. Ricky, thank you so much for joining me today, man. Please let people know where they can find all your stuff.
Dave, read all my work at SBNation.com covering the draft and the NBA in general.
Thank you, Ricky. Have a good one. Big thank you to Justin Termini, Kelly Eco, and Ricky O'Donnell for joining me on today's show. We are not going to have another show this week, Thanksgiving here in the United States. We had three last week. Still some stuff relevant to listen to or think about from last week's episode if you want to dip back into those. We'll be back again next week as well. Next Monday will be our next show. We have a loaded set list for the show next week as well. Thank you to Emmy and the whole team for producing today's episode. Appreciate you giving us a listen. Thank you for giving us your time. Enjoy your week. And if you're in the U.S., happy Thanksgiving.